Welcome. I'm surprised to see so many faces that I don't know. But that's okay. When I was first asked to be in this position, I went directly to comparative mind without hesitation. I looked at Nanette and I said, "We're so different." And I loved how she brought her full self forward. And I just felt so inadequate. And then in Dokusan, Jean reminded me of the carving on the donation box. Just yourself, that's enough. So I've had to be reminded again and again and again by various teachers of mine about how this isn't about me. It's about the Sangha. And I took great relief in that. All of a sudden, it wasn't about me. And I so appreciated that. I find it so much easier to give, and to give wholeheartedly sometimes. But we do get caught up in this mind of ours and wherever it wants to go. And so Kokyo suggested that primarily I should talk about turning points in my life. And I couldn't help but think how this path brought me right here, right now. And the myriad events that took place to make that happen. And if I go way back, I go to birth. And being born as a person, and being fortunate to be born into a family that was loving and caring. And even though they didn't make substantial money, they were loving, kind, honest people. And they taught me a great deal about precepts before I knew there were precepts. And so I feel I'm very fortunate in that regard, because it paved a way for me to have a seeking mind, to wish to know more about myself and about what we're about here, why we're here, and what we're about. And so over a long period of time, Nanette and I have been going to Tassajara for over 25 years, and yet we didn't have a practice. We would always sit zazen when we went, every morning that we went. We went in a variety of ways. We went as first as guests, then guest practice, then work practice. We've gone for many day sits with this Zen center. I was honored to be able, about 4 years ago, to take Catherine to Monterey repeatedly over about a 6-month period, where it was not only a wonderful time to spend together and to be friends, but it was also about Dharma. It's so wonderful how so many people in both significant roles and insignificant roles play this out for us in our lives. And all we have to do is pay attention. I'm a retired teacher. I'm still teaching. I taught for 30 years, but I'm still teaching. And I'm still learning from my students. And I can't help but think that just as this position is another Dharma gate, so is the moment to moment that we have in our lives. How we touch people, how people touch us, how we have teachers and our teachers become our friends, or sometimes our friends become our teachers. We are so fortunate in the moment to moment the day to day, it all unfolds before us. And all we have to do is pay attention. So I feel in many ways that I've really been blessed. I raised two beautiful girls with an unsuccessful marriage. And I entered into another marriage and had two wonderful stepsons and then had a remarkable son with my wife. And now they're all grown. And I see that as another teaching for us. Raising children, getting a better view of who we are, what we do, our choices that we make, the mistakes that we make, or as we perceive them as mistakes, and how it all moves forward and it all enriches us day by day, moment by moment, year after year. I've only had a practice here for a short time. I think we started showing up maybe in 2005 or 6, and immediately we were taken in and given jobs. And we would learn one thing after another thing after another thing. And we learned from Suzuki to say yes. And we just kept saying yes. And when Kokyo offered up this position, I immediately said yes, and then I had second thoughts right away. Because that comparative mind was all over me. And I'm so grateful for the reminders that people have given me, including Nanette. Not only as a wonderful partner, but as a good teacher to me too. That she leads always by example. And once again, all I have to do is pay attention. And not get caught up in that mind that goes every other direction, but straight forward and where it should be going. That mind that we sit down and we quiet it a little bit, or it's racing around constantly. And then we quiet it a little bit more. And then it goes off on its tangents once again. But we come back to the cushion and we come back to the breath. And I've received great calming in this. Many of you know that as I keep teaching, one of my jobs is to teach people to drive. I was out there this morning. It was just lovely. I was able to get closer to my teacher by driving with her. And so I learned that my jobs have been a Dharma gate. Meeting people face to face, heart to heart, encouraging and transforming what they think they are, or what they think their capacity is, or what they think their shortcomings are. It all gets changed by you giving them a different perspective. And once again, it's just about paying attention to the very thing that's right in front of you. And all you have to do is give it your heart and your mind. And you learn really quickly that it's not that difficult to be present. You simply have to pay attention. We were very grateful. We've done a myriad of classes here at Green Gulch. John Terrance Zendo. We've been many, many places and seeked out many, many teachings. And it's all been very beneficial. And it's still, to me, it comes back to paying attention to what is right now. And it was actually Catherine's mindfulness class that got me to looking at my teaching as actually being the central part in what I do to do my practice. That practice is every day. Practice is every moment. Practice is all the time, and I don't know when it's not practice. I don't understand that part. But I'm seeing more and more clearly as I get older that the moment to moment that we spend, even with people we don't even know, those moments are magical. Those moments are just to be cherished. And if you bring yourself forward and you use your heart, then every moment really, really looks like practice. I feel so fortunate that we have this practice at this place, that we have so many excellent teachers. I think as I approached this role, I did Dokusan with four people. With Catherine, it was rather informal. With Jean, it was very formal and it was repetitious. With Kokyo, it was formal, but it wasn't repetitious. Patrick pointed out to me that I'm not going to change this mind. That even though I resent that comparative nature that always comes up for me, that in this lifetime, that's probably not going to change. And instead of being disheartened by that, I had to laugh at myself and think about how true that probably is. That I don't have to hold on to the fact that I may not change this mind, but that I can repeatedly let it go and be reminded and let it go again and be reminded and keep moving forward and incrementally change my own perceptions a little bit. Maybe I won't be the new person that I sometimes perceive, because I'm still hanging on to some of that baggage and carrying it with me. But at least I'm able to look at it and then let it go. I felt so bad because I thought I should remind Catherine to come tonight. And there she is. And I'm so grateful you're here. I feel so supported. And I appreciate it so much. And I think it's so, so difficult sometimes to express fully how we feel about people who enter our lives and move through our lives and move our lives. It's so hard to express that with the depth that we feel that. And I do my utmost to exercise equanimity, to try not to judge. And this is something I learned very, very young. My parents were very good about being honest, not being judgmental, showing truth. And yet I never thought of them as being very religious people. And yet they carried their religion very clearly in their actions. And so in doing practice over this maybe short period of time, maybe it's been a long period of time, but over this time, learning how to practice, being a person, learning how to be beneficial to other people, even when there's nothing to gain. An excellent example is being involved with Global Sangha with Patrick. Cooking for the homeless garden for the last 3 years every Friday has been benefiting others. And without really expecting to or necessarily wanting, the benefits come right back at you every single time. And I would have Fridays sometimes where I'd think to myself, I don't know if I want to go cook today. I think I'd just like to take a day off. And so I would muster the energy and show up next door in the kitchen. And Patrick would usually already be there. Sometimes I would open up myself first, and as soon as I would arrive, everything would change. I was happy to be there. I was happy to be present in this place. It's not my kitchen, but it sure feels like my kitchen. In doing the role in the last session of Tenzo, I never knew how much Tenzo was practiced. I just never knew it. I had read about it. I had a little bit of an understanding of how it should be practiced. But until I engaged in that work in that kitchen for that period of time, it all became really clear to me. I kept fretting over, oh, should I be in the Zendo and should I be sitting right now? No, I should be just paying attention to the rice. And so it was another, it felt like a slow evolution, even though it took a day, where I settled into that position. And even though my mind was busy thinking about the next thing to be done, or washing dishes that needed to be taken care of and put away, I started realizing how deep that practice is in the kitchen. And this again goes right back to Catherine's mindfulness class, because one of the first things we looked at was, what ways do we have desire to things, and what aversions do we have, and what are we absolutely neutral about? And we started paying attention even at home, when I was doing the dishes at home, and being mindful of just doing the dishes. And so that was maybe 4 years ago. And now it's surfacing again, and it is so clear. I look back and think, gee, why wasn't it clear then? So this learning, this dharma that I'm holding in me just keeps getting clearer. And it doesn't always make it easier. But the clarity alone is enough. And it just keeps you going. I've been very fortunate here. I've been a work leader, and I'm still a co-work leader for Sangha Days. These roles that we take on help us to settle into this place. And this place feels so much like home to us. And to prove it, we just moved in next door. We still have our home on the farm, but it's so far away that when you do sessions and you leave here and you don't get to bed till 10:30 and then you have to get up at 4 o'clock to make 5 o'clock, it just made a lot of sense to find a home closer to home. So for this next session, it will be so luxurious to walk a few steps and to be able to get a little bit more sleep. How's my time, Kokyo?
Another 10 minutes.
Thank you. So now I'm starting to see almost everything as a Dharma gate. And in a way it seems so odd to me, and in another way it seems so natural. It seems odd because that's not how I perceive my life over time. And it seems natural because in practice, everything is practice. And so, first of all, learning just to show up. That was the first lesson. Just show up. Just show up. If you show up, then everything kind of falls into place. Even if your mind is racing all over the universe in Zazen. Because eventually it settles down. I don't know if it ever reaches some kind of perfection. When Kokyo describes samadhi, I wonder. I can't help but wonder. Oh, what would that be like? In the meantime, we just sit. And we try to let go of all those thoughts. It's a real chore. Because our mind does exactly what our mind does. And it's so hard to accept that. Even though it's such a natural phenomenon. It seems like we always want things to be a certain way or a better way. So all of our judgments come up about even how we think. So I'm very slowly learning to drop it. And I mean slowly. But we are so grateful for this practice. And when I perceive this role as nothing more than a Dharma gate, it helped me to say yes a second time. And when I looked at it really critically and said to myself, you know, quit worrying about things and just accept them. And it made such a difference in how I was carrying what I thought would be this horrendous responsibility. And so, in my process of learning more about myself, I'm learning to settle into whoever I am. I'm so grateful that my partner, very early on, accepted me exactly how I am. And that alone changed my perspective and helped me to relax into who I am. Instead of always thinking you have to be a certain way, she was so accepting that it enabled me to kind of relax with who I am. And that may not seem like a big deal, but it's huge. When you consider what we carry with us, our judgments about ourself, as much or more so as our judgment about others, we all carry that. It's the human condition. And I'm sure that there maybe are some cultures that don't have this going on, like we do so prevalently. But I know my myriad of judgments about myself I've carried and carried and carried, and I never relaxed them until Nanette helped it happen. And so now I'm at a place where I'm no longer perceiving the former Shuso. She's still the epitome of my life, but she doesn't have to, I don't have to measure up. I only have to bring myself forward. And I'm so grateful for that. It is such a relief. I was surprised to see so many faces that I hadn't seen before, and then I immediately realized that not everybody sits Zazen in the morning. A lot of people come to the temple in the middle of the day or in the evening. And I'm just not here three times a day. at least not usually. So I'm very happy to see so many wonderful faces, ones that I know well, ones that I know pretty well, ones that I don't know at all, ones that I work with on the board, and others that I work with in other capacities. My teachers, my friends. I was reflecting on that. My teacher and I'm your teacher. And it just seems so strange that that would dawn on me. But it feels pretty comfortable. Can't you imagine me teaching Catherine at 16 to drive? Okay, you were in your 80s when I taught you to drive. Okay. But the variety of capacities that we bring forth, all of what we are and who we are, all of us, not me, all of us, it is such a wonderful and marvelous thing. And it's especially a wonderful thing when you get a glimpse of it, when you get a sight of it and see it pretty clearly, how great that really is. I'm really grateful to be here. I'm grateful for this seat. As awkward as it might feel maybe sometimes, or as hesitant as I may have been to step forward, I have great gratitude. Just great gratitude. And I hope that never changes. And I don't think it will. Does anyone have any questions of me?
So could you say how raising five kids pointed you in the direction of schools?
Oh my, Patrick, that's such a long story. Many of you know we've had a couple of kids that have been really troubled. We have a son that spent 10 years in prison. We had a daughter that's boyfriend had to go to prison for good reason. Raising a family is ever easy. And what I learned from our children is that they're our teacher too. I was naive enough when I was young to think that when you raise children, you treat them all the same. And boy, did it dawn on me at some point that they're all different and they all require different things. And our job is to step forward and try to fill the requirements, to do our best at noticing, at paying attention to what their needs really are. Not what we think their needs are, but what their needs really are. And so raising five children, starting out in two rooms with no water and no electricity, I look back on it now and can hardly believe it. But it's just what you do at the time. It's exactly what you do at the time. And it's really no big deal. And the troubles and the heartaches that some of those children brought forward, that was a big deal. But doing the work of raising children is just that. It's just raising children. And you do your best and you make mistakes. And sometimes you don't learn about your mistakes until they're in their 30s. And then they tell you what your mistakes were. They're really clear about that. So you listen. And you try not to judge yourself too harshly. Because there's always room for improvement. And after they all move out of the house, our youngest is now, is he 26 or is he 27? You think he's 25? Boy, I'm sure glad you're here. The math is pretty tough for me. It was this great sigh when they all moved out. And then you immediately miss them. They are all such interesting young people. Just amazing young people. And for any kids that are growing up right now, I can hardly believe it. In this economy, I look back and think, oh, when I was 15, I went out and got a job and it was no big deal. Because I wanted a car. If I wanted a car, I had to pay for it. So I had to have a job. Today, when I drive young people sometimes, very few of them have jobs. Most of the ones that have jobs had an end to get the job or had such a great desire that they pushed and pushed and pushed until they were employed. And many, many, many kids, and I speak to them obviously not just about their driving, but you get to know them fairly intimately in a very short amount of time. And they tell you a lot about themselves and about what they're dealing with. And I just can hardly believe that it took this late date in my life to look back at what my father used to say, those were the good old days. And I could never understand that phrase. I just didn't get it. And now I get it completely. Because when I was young, those were the good old days. You could work if you wanted to work. You could do a lot of things if you wanted to do so. And today it is not so. And it's simple economics, you know, and politics. And it's such a harder world to grow up in now, I think, than it was when I was a teenager. And so I have a lot of empathy for the kids that go through the system today. And Nanette and I both worked at alternative high schools for our entire career. And so we saw kids that were struggling with drug abuse, alcoholism. If it wasn't theirs, it was their families. If they had a family. We saw so many kids that were troubled. And it was a great opportunity for both of us to reach out, to give support. And it was never enough. In my eyes, it was never enough. How could it be? You can't take them all home. Although we did take one home, didn't we? We brought a Salvadoranian young man that was 18 and a heroin addict home. And he kicked his habit. And he was a marvelous young man. And still is. Now he has a family. But when you see what some people struggle with, it's just heartbreaking. And that's why I know that I'm so fortunate. I didn't have to go through hardly any of that stuff. Thank you, Patrick.
Remember you sitting through long sessions, one after the other, and knowing how hard it was for you, and just seeing you do it time and time again, and just sitting straight.
Thank you, Catherine.
Talk about inspiration.
You've always commented that I have good posture.
I'm still enjoying it.
Well, I keep noticing little things. Oh, I think I'm getting a bone spur on my ankle now. You know, but isn't it the heart of our practice to learn to sit and to be still? And there's something really almost magical about being able to be still and to share quiet. I mean, we live out in the boonies where you hear owls all the time, and so it's pretty quiet. But when it's intentional quiet, there's something different about that. And when there's an entire room full of intentional quiet and the stillness that we're able to muster. And some people, it's very difficult to stay still. very difficult. And yet, it has just a very magical feel to it of unity, of support. I can remember back going to Tassajara and sitting next to a young man from the East Coast, and he sat so straight. And I had to tell him later on that I felt that he was supporting me just by sitting next to me. And he wasn't intentionally sitting next to me. And yet, it felt like support. And when you have a zendo that's full of people, and you have this wonderful quiet and this nice stillness, it actually helps your mind to be more still. And you can just resonate with that quietness. And that's, I think, one of the things that I actually like about sitting, is that even though my mind can go 100 miles an hour and go on tangents that are absolutely absurd, you can still settle back down and get quiet. You can let those thoughts go and become quiet again. So it's a wonderful part of practice, even though it's a very difficult part of practice. And we're fortunate that we get to share this together. Thank you so much.
Being armless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to mend them. Oh.